Hi, and welcome to the Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dodson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on the city of Gary closing beaches due to a surge in new COVID-19 cases. Governor Eric Holcomb announced the state's Back on Track plan will remain at stage 4.5 at least for another month. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with Ivy Tech Community College Vice Chancellor of Academic Affairs, Dr. Margaret Zimmer, and math professor Paul Camber. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. The city of Gary's beaches along Lake Michigan were closed Wednesday for 2 weeks due to a surge in new COVID-19 cases. Mayor Jerome Prince cited the beach's crowded conditions on Tuesday in ordering the closure. His order took effect Wednesday and shuttered Gary beaches, including the popular Marquette Park Beach, as well as their parking lots. Prince says Gary police will enforce closures by patrolling the city's entire shoreline, and anyone found on the beaches would be removed. The Times reports that Prince says Gary's health commissioner had recommended the beaches to be closed.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
The U.S. economy showed its largest decline in more than 70 years last quarter. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Samantha Horton reports, the broad measure of economic activity also points to areas where Indiana is struggling.
The gross domestic product calculates the value of goods and services and showed consumers holding back from spending in light of shutdowns due to the pandemic. The April, May, and June numbers showed an almost 10% quarterly drop. Indiana University economics professor Kyle Anderson says the national report does bring some concern for Indiana for not only manufacturing and exports, but also services.
Specifically, healthcare were hit particularly hard, and that, I think, might be surprising to some folks. But again, especially here in central Indiana, a lot of our economy is driven based on healthcare.
Anderson says he plans to continue following jobless claims and whether businesses are able to keep employees to get a better picture of what is happening in the state. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Samantha Horton.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Anti-hunger advocates from around the country say Congress needs to boost Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or food stamp, benefits in the next COVID-19 relief package. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brendan Smith reports they suggest increasing the maximum benefit and raising the minimum from $16 to $30 a month.
Emily Weichert-Bryant leads Feeding Indiana's Hungry, which works with food banks across the state. She says they're under increased strain during the pandemic, and she says boosting SNAP benefits can make a much bigger difference.
For every one meal that our members distribute, SNAP provides 9. It's an economic engine.
Haley Kotler works for a Kansas food program. She says boosting SNAP is vital because the situation for many families is likely about to get worse.
With the uncertainty around school schedules and hybrid schedules, making it impossible for working families to plan on a reliable full-time work schedule.
The latest Senate GOP relief proposal doesn't include additional resources for SNAP. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Indiana's reopening plan is stuck in park after Governor Eric Holcomb announced Wednesday the state won't move forward for at least another month. Stage 4.5, in place since the beginning of July, restricts restaurants to 75% capacity and limits bars, nightclubs, and other entertainment venues to 50%. Gatherings of any kind are restricted to 250 people unless there's approval from a local health department. Holcomb says he doesn't see the need to reimpose past restrictions like closing bars and nightclubs, but stresses the importance of local leaders and even individual businesses enforcing compliance.
For every 10 that are doing the right thing, if one doesn't enforce these guidelines at the local level, at the individual business or social gathering, it can ruin it for a much greater area.
HOCM's latest extension of Stage 4.5 runs through August 27th.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The Department of Workforce Development says it will borrow from the federal government to shore up its unemployment trust fund. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Justin Hicks reports the fund has paid more than three quarters of its balance to out-of-work Hoosiers through the pandemic.
DWD pays regular unemployment claims out of a rainy day fund built by payroll taxes from Indiana employers. At the start of the year, it had $900 million, but now stands at about $175 million. Unemployment loans to states will have zero interest until the end of the year, but it could mean tax increases for employers in the future. Chief of Staff Josh Richardson says the exact timing for borrowing will depend on tax revenue from the second quarter and how many people still need unemployment benefits.
We'll keep an eye on that, but it looks like sometime in September, you know, if the numbers continue to fall, hopefully late September. If they don't, probably early September for borrowing.
Federal law requires the state to pay unemployment claims no matter the fund's balance, and a loan will not affect pandemic unemployment programs created by Congress. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Justin Hicks.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Hoosier renters and homeowners will be shielded from evictions and foreclosures for another couple of weeks. Governor Eric Holcomb announced Wednesday he's extending his eviction foreclosure moratorium through August 14th. He emphasizes, though, those who have struggled with payments need to work with their landlords and mortgage holders.
We do want to make sure, however, in the next couple weeks here that folks are making payment plans.
Indiana's rental assistance program opened in July and already received more than 20,000 applications, more than the state anticipated it could serve. Indiana Housing and Community Development Authority Director Jacob Seip says, however, the state isn't the only option.
Community foundations, some of our not-for-profits and our trustees also provide assistance with rental and homeownership. And utility assistance.
Holcomb says the state will find resources for its rental assistance program if the initial funding is exhausted.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Joe Kernan, former South Bend mayor and 48th governor of Indiana, died early Wednesday morning at the age of 74 following a long illness. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Anna Caroline Caruso reports on how Kernan helped shape South Bend into the city it is today.
Kernan served in the Navy during the Vietnam War before returning to his hometown, South Bend. During the war, he was held as a prisoner along with other American POWs. He was elected as mayor for three consecutive terms before moving into state politics. Many people in South Bend remember Kernan for what they describe as his positive, friendly nature and what he contributed to the city during his time as mayor. Steve Lickey succeeded Kernan as South Bend mayor and served on the city's common council during Kernan's first mayoral term.
Joe was a terrific leader. He had a great vision for the city. He had a great love for the city of South Bend. He brought out a fierce loyalty in his friends and his family and in the community.
Kernan was known for keeping minor league baseball in South Bend and for helping establish the South Bend Center for the Homeless. Funeral arrangements for Kernan are being handled by Wellsheimer's Funeral Homes in South Bend. There will be no public services at this time due to the pandemic. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Anna Caroline Caruso.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Voter advocates want Hoosiers to be able to vote by mail in this year's general election. Groups including Common Cause, the League of Women Voters, the ACLU, and the NAACP all want the state to expand vote by mail to anyone who wants it for the November 3rd election. They also want those ballots to count if they're postmarked by Election Day, instead of having to physically arrive at the county clerk's office by noon on the 3rd. And they want counties to set up safe drop-off locations for those ballots. Governor Eric Holcomb voted in person in the primary. And his focus is on making sure the state provides in-person voting opportunities in the fall.
We are in a much better situation now than we were there when we delayed it. And we have the proper PPE to man the voting sites.
Asked if there were any issues caused by expanded vote by mail in the primary, Holcomb cited delays in counting ballots and counties being overwhelmed by the demand. Many argued that overwhelmed issue could be solved by expanding the system now to allow counties time to prepare. Holcomb said vote by mail should be extended if the state is under a stay-at-home order again.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
People in Indiana and around the country are receiving seeds in the mail from China that they didn't order. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Rebecca Thiel reports, it could be part of what's called a brushing scam.
That's where a company makes a fake review of their product online by sending it to your address. Indiana Congressman Jim Banks serves on a congressional China task force. Recently, he's seen an uptick in scams through Amazon, where several Indiana businesses sell their goods.
More of them are coming to me and telling me about fake Amazon reviews that are intended to tilt businesses away from purchasing products from American vendors and toward purchasing products from Chinese vendors.
Banks says he's not sure if the seeds are related and has asked the U.S. Department of Justice to investigate. Officials with the Office of Indiana State Chemists say not to plant the seeds or throw them away. They could be noxious weeds, invasive species, or carry plant diseases that could threaten the state's agriculture. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Rebecca Thiel.
If you receive a packet of seeds from China, send them to the Indiana Office of the USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service in Franklin.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Ivy Tech Community College Vice President of Academic Affairs, Dr. Margaret Simmer, as well as math professor Paul Camber.
Ivy Tech Community College has created what is called a Learn Anywhere option. Let's find out more about it. We have with us today to talk about this fall semester plan, Dr. Margaret Simmer. She's the Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs with Ivy Tech here in the region. And we also have with us from the Math Department, Professor Paul Camber. Thank you both for joining us on Regionally Speaking today. Thank you for having us. And thank you, Professor Camber, for joining us as well.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Well, I guess ask you, Dr. Simmer, if you will kind of let us know first what more about this combination of, I guess, face-to-face and virtual and online courses that Ivy Tech is offering this fall. How did the concept start? And tell us more about it, please. Well, the concept started probably organically in several different ways. You know, I had worked with a group in South Bend several years ago in the IT department that was very interested in giving students different options for attending class because our students tend to have a lot going on in their lives, right? We have people that are parents that are working, that are taking care of parents, that are doing a whole bunch just to keep all the balls in the air. And then, of course, there are students as well. So, you know, in South Bend, we were looking for those alternatives to just provide flexibility to students. And then statewide, there's initiative for single parents, single moms in particular, where, again, looking to provide flexible options for students so that they can attend school and attend to all the other things in their lives. So It really was driven out of just need for what our students are saying they need. And you know, just because our students are just very busy and they need flexibility. Right. That's really much the story behind it. We're always trying to be innovative at Ivy Tech and always trying to think out of the box. So this came from that direction, keeping up with our students and keeping up with innovation. I suppose besides that flexibility aspect, which you want to strive for all the time, we have the pandemic that's underway, so you have safety that that adds another level of problems to the issue too, doesn't it? Absolutely. This came in very handy right now. You know, back in March when we got the stay-at-home order, we had to pivot, you know, in 2 weeks' time from a 80% schedule that was face-to-face traditional classes to, you know,
80% virtual. Some of our students, you know, just ceased coming to school because they were in courses that were completely hands-on, mm-hmm. while most of our students were able to accommodate. So having the option of doing a virtual, which is our Zoom courses, right? So, and then online, which is traditional online, is really an asynchronous format where the teacher is a facility, but students work at their own pace. And then with the combination of face-to-face, which, of course, we're not really embracing, we didn't embrace in the spring, but may do some of that more in the fall, it gives students all the options for them to, you know, to stay safe, stay at home. So many of them are parents with kids at home, and all of a sudden they're teachers. And, it's really providing that option for safety as well as flexibility.
Now, I get the impression that you will do as much as you possibly can, certainly with online capabilities and with virtual capabilities, you know, using IvyLearn and Zoom, among the other techniques and the pieces of equipment out there. But I suppose there are probably some areas of a coursework that have to be done face-to-face with, and particularly if you have a technical skill that has to be learned, it has to be done in the shop, so to speak, quite literally.
Right, absolutely. So, you know, that's been a challenge of ours, but we're getting it done. So, you know, most of the courses that were, let's say, negatively impacted the most were our nursing health clinicals, our science labs, you know, those that we have, the beautiful science labs over at IU Northwest in the Arts and Sciences building. You know, we couldn't use those labs. And, of course, then the, you know, hands-on manufacturing, automotive, machine tool, welding, all of those had to pause for a time being, but we are safely in buildings now, finishing up those courses from the spring. A lot of consideration went into how we do that safely. A lot of social distancing is you know, in play. Mm-hmm. Everybody wears a mask. You know, we don't have more than 10 people in a large room at any one time, and most of the time we're just serving students one at a time to try to get them through. So, we have put a lot of safety measures into place at Ivy Tech. It's our number one priority. But also serving the students and helping them complete coursework is a priority too. So, but we're getting it done. I think we'll have all of our spring students that were not able to finish up here in a couple weeks. So we're really excited about that.
That's great. We're talking with Dr. Margaret Semmer, who's the Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs with Ivy Tech. And we also have with us, too, on the line, Math Department Professor Paul Kember. And that's a very interesting thing to bring up, and I'm glad that you are with us today, Professor Kember. Math, I think, is one of those courses that a lot of people, and I'm certainly one included, think that you can't really do successfully unless it's in person, that you have to be able to talk directly with the teacher in person or look at a chalkboard and what the teacher puts up there as far as working on problems are concerned. But that's not always the case, that math can be done on virtually, I suppose, and certainly online. Is that true?
Absolutely. And we try. That's our goal, is uh-huh. to make our virtual experience the same as the classroom experience. So the way we do it is through Zoom. And you have an instructor, you have a class time in our virtual math courses. And attendance isn't required. So, you know, we know that our students have a lot of things going on, you know, and they may miss a class. So we record every single lecture that we do during the class time. We record it, we make it available to all the students, and you get the exact same thing in the virtual that you get in the face-to-face. You get a typical lecture, you know, where in math you'd explain to the students how to do the problem. You'd ask some students to do the problems themselves. And what's really nice is they can respond to you. They can ask questions just like if they were in the classroom. So they use their microphone. They can use their phone. You can log into Zoom through your cell phone, mm-hmm. Or a computer, a laptop, and they can talk to the instructor and ask questions just like they would in class. But you get the added benefits of having recordings. That way, if you miss something, you don't fall behind because you can go back and you can watch the recordings and work on your homework. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the homework nowadays is typically done online anyway, so there isn't a big difference there for the students. So we've tried to make the virtual experience as close to the face-to-face experience as possible.
Now, had you been using virtual classes for math in the spring semester and now continuing the monocoursing into the fall semester?
Yes, actually, Ivy Tech has a big advantage because we were doing streaming courses from the beginning of the spring semester. So mm-hmm. I actually had a class. We put in a camera in the classroom. So I'd have some students that came to class and were there face-to-face with me, and I had students that were online. And especially with bad weather, it was good that the students that were in the face-to-face class could just log in online, and they could get their questions answered, and they can watch the lecture. So we had a little bit of a head start in that area, and so we're just continuing to iron out all the issues.
So
we're in a pretty good spot now.
So you got some good response, I assume, from the students that took the spring semester classes as to how they did it, that they didn't really miss not being in the classroom?
Yes, absolutely. As an instructor, you know, I missed having the students in the class, but when I asked them, you know, well, how was the virtual? He said it was identical. It was the same thing. So there's been really good response, especially being able to watch the videos and to be able to catch up in class.
Now, Dr. Semmer, we have just heard now from Professor Camper about his math classes that he offered beginning in the spring semester and continuing on now into the new academic year. What other types of courses like this are part of the overall option that Learn Anywhere option, I guess as it's called by Ivy Tech Community College, that include the virtual method of teaching?
So we're looking at a schedule that is about 60%. It's going to be about 60 to 70% virtual mm-hmm. on Zoom. And we call it, we code it for our internal purposes, blended. And that basically means that, you know, the course will be offered on Zoom, but the student can attend either synchronously or asynchronously. And I know we're so good at throwing out language and acronyms that not everybody knows, but that whole flexibility of a student, as Professor Camber was saying, to be there, you know, live or to take, you know, to listen to it later is a big part of it. But we're looking at 60 to 70% of our courses for the fall being in that format. We really are concerned about the pandemic. We know that transitioning students midstream is a little bit more bumpy for students. So we feel that having most of the curriculum that can be virtual is virtual for the fall. You know, the only thing that we'll really have on a campus will be those courses in the curriculum where students need to actually physically touch machinery
yeah.
or equipment or even patients. And that's going to be an ongoing conversation how we do that. But really the only students that will be on campus in a social distancing environment and with masks on, everybody will be wearing masks, will be if they absolutely cannot do the curriculum virtually. So we've got a lot out there, and we're excited about it. Our professors, Paul Camber, and the whole Ivy Tech faculty team have really jumped on board with creating the quality virtual scenario for students, because we really do believe our teaching is important and that it needs to be engaging at all times and that students, you know, need to learn. That's what we're here for.
I know that you mentioned here just a little bit as what you mentioned in describing things that are going to happen on the Ivy Tech campuses, and you mentioned about the preparation for bringing students actually back into the classroom in certain circumstances and certain courses. So obviously that means mm-hmm. that the Ivy Tech staff has to be ready. They've had to deep clean the entire buildings, I suppose, and the labs and all that's had to be set up so that when people come back are able to do that.
Yes. You know, we have a whole team on it. You know, we have a facilities director, Bruce Curry. You might want to interview him at some point. He's been very busy the entire summer, obviously along with the chancellor's directive, Louis Gonzalez. You know, they've been working all summer to prepare the buildings, to understand all the guidelines, to understand all the mandates. Everything is exceptionally clean and well marked. We have signage everywhere explaining what the expectations are as a person enters the building. And nobody gets in the building without, you know, security staff stopping them almost immediately. And we are giving people masks. You know, the students will each get a mask The staff will each get two masks each. We're trying to provide as much as possible. I'm in conversations regularly about the PPE that are needed for our health and technology students. So it's a big conversation, but I have to say that we are ahead of the curve and very prepared for students and staff to come back.
Well, it certainly sounds that way. And if people have questions, they can always go to the Ivy Tech Community College website and look it up that way too, I suppose.
Absolutely. If you go to our website, there's a big banner across the top that said something to the effect of, learn about the most recent COVID response here, and you click on it, and it'll explain how we're getting ready for the fall. You know, we understand not everybody's going to be as open arms about coming back, so we're going to be prepared the best we can to serve all the students in the ways they need to be served.
Dr. Margaret Semmer is the Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs with Ivy Tech Community College, and we've had with us as well from the Math Department, Professor Paul Camber with Ivy Tech Community College. Thank you both for being with us today. The best of luck as we get a new semester and a new academic year started with Ivy Tech, and we will check back with you to see how things are working out.
I look forward to that conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.